KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up in Forum's next hour, we'll focus our attention on two initiatives that are on the November ballot here in California, both related to criminal justice. Proposition 6 and Proposition 9, we'll hear arguments from both sides, and we'll take your calls and emails next after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to the second hour of this morning's forum. Proposition 6, which is often linked to Proposition 9, and we'll be talking about both of them this hour, actually splitting the hour between them. Proposition 6 is called the Police and Law Enforcement Criminal Penalties and Laws Initiative Statute. It was written, actually, by the co-author of Jessica's Law as an anti-gang measure. It would, among other things, increase funding for law enforcement, and it would require stiffer penalties for certain gang-related as well as drug-related crimes, and deny bail to undocumented immigrants, expand juvenile trials for youth as young as 14, and allocate some $10 million to police athletic leagues. There are a number of other things in the proposition. We want to discuss it and find out why some are for it and why some are against it in this first half hour of forum. And in fact, on the pro side is Senator George Runner, state senator who is the co-author of Prop 6 and who joins us this morning by phone. Good morning.
Good morning.
We're also joined this morning in studio by Jakarta Amani, who is executive director of the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights. He's also treasurer of the No On 6 and 9 campaigns. And welcome to you. Good morning.
Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. And Senator Runner, I'm going to begin with you. And this is being essentially presented by your side as a victims initiative, as a safe neighborhood act, as all about public safety. Give us the particulars and tell us really what it is all about.
Well, we believe it's a balanced approach to deal with what we are very concerned about in the state of California, and that is a growing crime, particularly related to the issue of gang activity. And so we decided to do what we wanted to look at as a comprehensive approach, that is dealing with effective early intervention with accountability so that indeed we can try to intervene in the lives of at-risk young people prior to any criminal activity through effective programming and that have some kinds of audits attached to them to see if they're attaining what they said, along with dealing with individuals in their first criminal activities so that they're not kind of put off until they become hardened criminals. And then what we try to do then at that point is focus on a few penalty increases that we think make sense for Californians, that prosecutors, DAs have told us that they need as tools in order to particularly stop and break that relationship between the adult gang member recruiting the young gang member, and also enhance penalties in regards to use of guns and crimes. And then the other item that it deals with is the issue of sustainable funding, the ability for law enforcement with these, what we call these kind of street criminal issues, to have funding that they indeed know is going to be there from year to year, that it's not subject to being held as a budget hostage. That is often the case with these dollars. And that's what we also then do with the sustainable funding. So that's kind of a total comprehensive package that we've put together with Proposition 6.
Boy, it's a big package. I'm looking at
increased
penalties and new crimes created by this measure. And just to give listeners a kind of sampling of what we're talking about, gang members convicted of home robbery, carjacking, extortion, or threats to witnesses would be subject to life terms in prison. Mm-hmm. Failure to register as a gang member with local law enforcement would be a felony or misdemeanor, depending
right.
on the underlying conviction. Methamphetamines possession, now defined as, would be defined as a felony,
right.
Adds additional year in prison for car theft if the theft was for the purpose of selling a stolen car. In other words, there's a kind of potpourri of a lot of things in this bill, and the LA Times said it's confused. It's an anti-crime measure, but would add $1 billion at a time when we're close to insolvency. And
we would prefer to call it comprehensive. We try to solve both the issue of of trying to deal with what we believe are targeted criminal issues that we believe, for instance, carjacking. Let's talk about car stealing. California has the fastest rate of increase on car thefts than any other state. In fact, most states are actually decreasing. So we targeted what we believed were the kinds of crimes that people seem to be committing in the state. And then, of course, we did that with the issue of sustained funding. We did not believe it would be wise for us to go ahead and give tools to law enforcement without helping them also know that they're going to have the revenues in order to carry out those tools, whether that be for GPS tracking for first-time offenders or whatever the program is. So we believe that what it is comprehensive, and yeah, it is a very big piece of legislation.
Senator George Runner with us, co-author of Proposition 6, and Jakarta Amani is also with us. He's executive director of the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights, treasurer of the No on 6 and 9 campaigns. I know you have concerns, Mr. Amani, about the cost of this, because it's going to be done without taxes, so it would presumably have to come perhaps out of social services, but you have larger concerns with respect to justice?
Well, clearly, but let me just, you know, people, some of your listeners may know me. They can find me on the web, and you know, I'm with the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights. And so it's no shock what I think. But let's start with the Orange County Register comes out and calls California's Prop 6 editorial and its Prop 6 editorial a criminally bad anti-crime measure. It goes on to say that this initiative is little more than a massive funding and power grab by law enforcement agencies, and engages in the basest form of fear-mongering to expand government, increase government spending, and toughen up sentencing to unjust levels. Now, that's the Orange
County. From once conservative Orange County.
This is the Orange County Register, right?
They call it a criminal act? Why would you think they're calling it criminal?
They're saying it's criminally bad. They're saying that rather than addressing these problems in a sensible fashion by focusing on local law enforcement and community policing policy, supporters of Prop 6 have taken a big government approach that almost is certainly to fail. So, you know, with all due respect to Senator Runner, Prop 6 is comprehensive nor balanced. It really is a grab bag full of special interest pet projects that range from completely out of touch to unconstitutional. In its 32 pages, Prop 6 has mandatory background checks for everybody in public housing. It weakens hearsay rules to get easier convictions. And it increased sentences to such a harsh level that it's almost certain to ensure a federal takeover. California has the worst prison overcrowding problem that you can imagine. We have federal courts and federal judges looking at taking over the prison system. We have the health care receiver who just came back first with a $15 billion ask for building healthcare beds, and then an $8 billion ask. And then now the judge just said the state's going to have to give $3 billion to build beds for sick inmates.
So you see this as increasing prisons beyond the scope of what we can handle in the state, and you also see it as infringing, therefore, on human rights?
Well, you know, part of the problem with Prop 6 is, you know, it's supposed to be all this stuff that's going to help. It's theoretically fair and balanced. Well, there's, you know, we already spend $10 billion in the state on corrections. This is going to make it $11 billion. And that's straight out of the general fund. So that could be paying for health care, education, Meals on Wheels they just cut for seniors. There's tons of pain in this thing. And there's no guarantees. There's no stated outcomes. There's no evaluation. There's no oversight. And no guarantee for one more cop on the street. I think that that's risky. You know, if Senator Runner had put together a really clear, flexible package, it locks law enforcement into these funding streams and these programs that aren't evidence-based. We know that the statistics on crime change and evolve over time, but we've gone to the ballot, and so now the legislature is going to take 3/4 vote of the legislature to amend and change this in any way. And we can barely get them to do a 2/3 vote for their budget to save their own skins. So why would they be able to do a 3/4? We're locking up funding, and it's the most irresponsible kind of ballot box budgeting, especially in a time of shrinking receipts and growing deficits.
Senator Runner, can you address some of these concerns?
Sure, let me first speak to the issue of the Orange County Register. Orange County Register doesn't like any carve-outs. They, for instance, strongly oppose Prop 98 school funding. That's just their philosophy. I don't believe the opponents oppose Prop 98 school funding. You know, that's just how they believe in the world that they live in down there.
Yeah, Mr. Romani raised the issue of locking up funds, which Prop 98 essentially does too.
Right. That's correct. You know, all I'm saying is they would be opposed to any of those kinds of issues, no matter what the program, whether it be law enforcement, whether it be education. So that's just how it is that's the world to which they think in. But I think let me just talk to a couple of issues. One of the issues was that would require criminal background checks on all people who use public housing. That is just not true. What we do is there's federal law that is in place in regards to what the requirements are to be in Section 8 housing. That's federal law put in by President Clinton back a number of years ago. What happens is local local folks who administer the program don't have the capacity to actually see if these federal laws are indeed being upheld by those individuals in that housing. What we simply do is set up an account, and that is if a local government would like to be able to use this money, a grant money, in order to see if indeed the people in their housing meet the federal standard, then the requirement is that there will be a criminal background check. Now, many places already do that, but if a jurisdiction doesn't want to do that, they don't have to. They just don't have access to those funds that are in this proposition. So to say that we require for everybody is just not true, and what we do require is for everybody who stays in public housing to indeed be there as agreed under federal law. Because remember, what happens when there's somebody who's in Section 8 housing who's a gangster or a drug dealer, that means that there could be an elderly couple, a widow, or whatever, who can't get into that housing because of it. So I think that's an important balance that we've struck in regards to this particular issue.
Let me get a response from you, Jukata Imani.
So, again, the Riverside Press Enterprise comes out and says, Prop 6 on the November ballot illustrates that no matter how dire California's governmental crisis, an initiative can make things worse. This proposition would aggravate the state's budget woes and further stress the prison system. That's not Jukata Imani talking. That is the Riverside Press.
You know, I'd be glad to debate my opponent if he'd like to talk about the initiative.
Come on. Excuse me, Mr. Runner. I wasn't cutting you off. Hold
no
on a second.
There's no reason for us to even be on this phone call. Listen, the
Senator Runner, hold on. I didn't cut you off. I listened. I let you speak. Can I finish? Let me finish, Mr.
Well, you
Runner.
Were going to an editorial. I'd appreciate it if you maybe responded to the senator's response to what you said in terms of content rather than bring in the editorials.
Well, all I'm trying to say is, you know, this is so out of touch. It's so out of step with where California is right now. California has, and Senator Runner should know this. He's a senator in the California legislature. He knows that the state has no money to pay the bills it has right now. And he wants to encumber us with $1 billion more. And then he turns around and he knows this isn't true. He says it's only 1% or less than 1% of the general fund. But what Senator Runner doesn't tell you is he knows that so much of the state general fund is already tied up in this kind of ballot box budgeting. He ran most of this stuff through the California legislature over the last number of years and lost it there. And now he's going to the voters who are increasingly understanding we can't keep running the credit card every time somebody jumps up and says, oh, there's a problem. I don't know why Senator Runner thinks that he can solve this problem simply by throwing money at it and locking the money up in restricted programs that can only be changed at the ballot box.
All right, I want to do this. I want to open the phone lines because I know there are many of you who have questions about this initiative and would like to weigh in here with comments, opinions. And in fact, I want to make the lines available to you so you can talk with either Senator Runner about his proposition, which is Proposition 6 that we're discussing, or with Jukata Imani, who is opposed to the proposition. And our phone lines are available. Our toll-free number is 866-733-6786. That's toll-free from wherever you're listening to us or however, radio, internet, or Sirius satellite, 866-733-6786. You can also send an email with a comment or a question, and the email address is simply forum@kqed.org. This will be on the November California ballot. It would increase funding for law enforcement. It would also stiffen penalties for certain drug and gang-related crimes. And I think, Senator Runner, maybe we can simplify or codify this to some extent for listeners by saying what you feel is most important here in terms of your measure that California citizens would be voting for.
Well, I guess we would. The reason we even brought it to the voters is we believe public safety is the number one responsibility of government. If you don't feel safe, if you don't feel safe, then whether you're at school or at the park or in your community, that undermines all your other freedoms. And so that's why we believe it should be highlighted, and we believe that it is rightful to set aside some of those dollars. But I think perspective is important in regards to the amounts. First of all, we already fund these programs at about $600 million. The new money that's included in this proposition is $300 million. So to talk about it being a billion-dollar new deal is just not true. Again, two-thirds of it already in the state budget. The other issue, I think, is perspective again. And let me use this year for an example. Yeah, it is tough financial times. But, in K-12 education, we increased K-12 education this year, $1.5 billion. Even in these tough financial times, $1.5 billion. Now, I'm fine. That's okay. That's fine. But at the same time, we decreased these frontline law enforcement programs by over 20%. So we think balance is what's important, and we don't think that kind of decision that the legislature made, quite frankly, is where the public is. That's why we're willing to take this to the public.
Let me ask Mr. Mani, and then we'll go to our callers. Senator Runner saying the figure of a billion is much too inflated, and he did bring up the 20% decrease, which I think is accurate law enforcement. Could you address those concerns? Because they're obviously a concern for public safety on both counts.
Yeah, no doubt. What Mr. Runner left out is that then they went back and cut $3 billion out of the state, out of education. So it actually isn't funded to the Prop 98 levels. It's
not
funded. Please let me finish, Senator.
Yeah.
The other thing he didn't say is they cut fire protection drastically when we're entering into the worst wildfire season in the time of year in the state. And again, this is really about locking away funds. There's all kinds of stuff. There's 32 pages, 50 changes to the law. I would encourage your listeners to actually read it and dig into it and look at Prop 6. Let me finish.
He's just correcting you on saying you're wrong about the fire fund cutting, that it didn't take place this year.
Ask the California professional firefighters who are opposed to Prop 6 and who have come out and they understand that, in the past they were told, oh, let's go to the ballot, let's get money for public safety, and then cut out of the public safety deal. And most of that money disappeared into the black box of the state budget that can't be found. There's no oversight in this. There's no evaluation. There's no way to undo it as things change. If next year what we need to deal with is truancy, you can't go get this money. It's locked away, and it's ballot box budgeting.
Well,
and it's just bizarre to me that I'm arguing
with
the chair of the Republican caucus, and I am somehow more fiscally conservative. The black kid from Oakland is debating the chair of the Republican caucus about smart and responsible fiscal policy at the state level.
Well, let's talk a moment about accountability. One of the things that Prop 6 establishes is an accountability commission that goes in and evaluates programs that right now uses state money and also local money that are supposed to be intervention programs for at-risk kids. The city of L.A. had, over the last 10 years, invested over $100 million at-risk programs. And when evaluated after a 10-year period, found that none of them proved to be successful. And, in fact, they found state grant money that was actually going to gang members.
Yeah,
and
there's
programs.
No evaluation for the police programs. For the law enforcement programs, is there evaluation, Senator Runner?
They're all evaluated.
You can take money away from... You can take money away from law enforcement programs that prove to be ineffective without a two-thirds vote of the legislature, Senator Runner?
They are all evaluated each year.
It's a simple yes or no question. You can take money away from law enforcement programs that are proved to be ineffective without a two-thirds vote of the legislature.
In order to change these,
so you're holding community programs responsible, but you're not holding law enforcement programs responsible.
Excuse me. Now you're
in any particular line item, it would take a two-thirds vote of the legislature. But these programs are evaluated every year. Now, the programs that weren't evaluated were these community-based programs that were supposed to be for at-risk kids, hundreds of millions of dollars wasted, that were supposed to help at-risk kids that didn't go for those programs. So what we have the ability to do with this program is to go in and do the evaluation. We can't cut the money off, but then at least we can put out publicly what's happening with these dollars and whether or not they're truly going to where they're supposed to go, helping kids. Now, again, that should be that's taxpayer fraud, but more importantly, it's an abuse of these at-risk kids who are supposed to be helped with these programs.
All right, let me bring our callers in because they've been waiting patiently here, and our first caller is from Oakland. Charissa, good morning. Charissa, are you there?
Oh, yes, I can hear you now. Thank you. I have a question for the senator. Senator, it's completely clear that prison rehabilitates nobody. And we have prisons that are completely overfull of people whose lives are then wrecked and they come out and they can barely get housing or jobs anywhere. I don't understand how incarcerating more people is going to make us have a safer state. That makes no sense.
Well, good. You've asked actually a very good question, and let me answer it in two different ways. One is that's why we put most of the money up front in regards to early intervention and probation, because we want to keep young people out of prison. Now, let me follow up on another issue, and that's also why we have in this program a parolee mentoring program that helps parolees once they leave prison in order for job training, in order to be successfully integrated back into their community. Believe me, we have a huge problem with prisons, but it's not so much going in the front door. California is the only state that sends more people to prison from parole than we do from court. And that's what we need to change, and that's why we've actually included parolee mentoring in order to help people who have coming out of prison successfully integrate back into society so they're not on this treadmill back into prison.
All right, that question was to the senator. I think this question is going to be to Jakarta Amani. Go ahead, John.
Hi, Senator, I have a question for you. I'm a classic Bay Area liberal, but I think your proposals sound common sense. But my question to you is, why is this punted to the voters? Why can't the legislature get themselves elected? We sent you there to do.
John, you could ask that about almost every initiative that's on your ballot.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. No kidding.
I'm afraid.
No, I think it is a shame. I mean, I think my opponent actually pointed out the fact that many of these issues were brought to the legislature, including the increased dollars for probation and money for parole mentoring. And it just didn't get through the legislature. And so in California, we do have this ability when the legislature doesn't act that we can indeed deal with it. And let me just give you another example. I mean, I think the fact is, and this is probably the one issue that we hear the most from folks, that just to make a lot of sense, and the Bay Area certainly has been confronted with this, and that is the fact that somebody can be an illegal alien, can do a violent crime against a citizen, and yet they're going to be turned out then on parole only to either run or do crime on somebody else. Now, again, we've had bills like that to try to fix that, but again, they can't pass the legislature, and so we've got to go to common sense issues, take them right back to the public.
We've got limited time here, Senator. You've had a little more time than your opponent, so Jakarta Amani, let me get a final statement from you, particularly about the nature of the mentoring program that the senator has highlighted as being a positive in his bill.
Yeah. So, you know, again, the senator often claims that this is comprehensive and balanced. Probation gets like 1% of all this $1 billion. And with ongoing increases, it's going to rapidly grow to be beyond $1 billion because it's pegged to inflation. So my organization has worked very hard to get local probation programs the resources they need and to make sure they're evidence-based in practice. But locking away the funding at the ballot box just means that the state will be forced into making tougher and tougher and tougher decisions. The other thing that happens because of this is those are going to be passed down to the locals. Just in this last budget fiasco, the legislature had this bright idea to raise our income tax withholdings at the local level and to close the budget gap. So they're going to be back asking for our money.
Let me thank both of you. Senator George Runner, thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Jakarta Amani, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And when we return, we're going to talk about Proposition 9. Actually, Jakarta Amani is going to stay. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The Criminal Justice System Victims' Rights Parole Initiative constitutional amendment and statute would allow for greater access to information for crime victims and an expanded role in the criminal justice process. That's Proposition 9. It would also reduce the opportunities for parole hearings for those serving life sentences and limit the access to state-provided attorneys for parole violators. So now we turn our attention to Proposition 9, which will also be on the November California ballot, and these two propositions are often linked. In fact, I don't know how relevant this is, but a man who paid to put both of them on the ballot and put a good deal of money behind Proposition 9, is facing about 340 years in prison. Henry Nichols, 21 federal indictments. Just one of those interesting footnotes to this. Let me tell you who's joining us for this second segment on Proposition 9. Assemblyman Todd Spitzer is statewide chair of Yes on 9, and he joins us this morning. Good morning to you.
Hey, Michael. How are you?
Okay, and good to have you. We're also going to have Jakarta Amani standing forward on this one as well, that is standing opposed to it. He's executive director again of the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights and treasurer of the No on Six and Nine campaigns. And as I said, many are seeing them linked. Do you see them linked, Assemblyman Spitzer? And give us an outline of what Nine is as opposed to Six.
Sure. Well, you know, Michael, it's really a pleasure to be here. You may not remember, but when I was a law student at Hastings Law and going to Berkeley, I actually bought an auction item that you donated to charity, and I was a guest on your show. My voice was in much better form in condition that day, but it's been a long time, so it's really an honor. I listened to you for many years on KGO Radio. I have to tell you, you know, these are not linked. The opposition is trying to link 6 and 9, and they need to do that because they know that Prop 9, which is just a victim's bill of rights and says that victims should have just as much rights as criminals in the state of California, is an indefensible position from their perspective. So, of course, they have to try to muddy the water and drag Prop 9 down along with Proposition 6. It's really a shameful, I think, tactic on their part, because they're really going after crime victims, people who found themselves part of a justice system when they didn't intend at all to be part of that system. And by happenstance, they're victims in a system that can be overwhelming, and they do need to have constitutionally protected rights to get through it.
It's characteristic in the last half hour of Jakarta Amani to bring in some editorials, so I'm going to bring in one myself here just to get your response to it. The San Diego Union said there's many sensible things in this initiative. Keeps victims notified of relevant legal proceedings, minimizes bureaucratic hassles, but they're saying it's really about making parole more difficult.
You asking that of me?
Yeah,
Michael?
I am, of you, Assemblyman.
I'm sorry. It really doesn't. I mean, look, there's certain people we know who are going to be up for parole who will never get paroled. I can think of two people who are at Corcoran State Prison who have life sentences, and yet they come up for parole, and that's Charles Manson and Sirhan Sirhan. And there's others, less famous individuals, who come up for parole and don't stand any chance of getting paroled. But the community faces a lot of unrest in obviously the low-profile cases where people are not sure if the individual is going to get parole. The victims have to travel to the prison. They have to make a statement in front of the defendant and the parole board, and it can be very intimidating. And so what this says is, look, we're not changing the fact that a person could get a one-year denial, but they should be able to get up to a 15-year denial, because like for a person like Charles Manson, who we all know is never going to get out, why should we have to repeat that process every 5 years? And so certain defendants, certain inmates, certain individuals who have been convicted of murder, who have life sentences, should not force society to go through this parole hearing process at a maximum every 5 years. Our initiative just says, look, it could be 1 year, but the parole board has the option to extend it to 15 years.
Why does your initiative make this constitutional?
Because for so long, I mean, there are plenty of victims' rights which are currently in statute. There are some that we include that are not. And by elevating this to the state constitution, it sends a very strong message to judges and to others in the criminal justice system that we are putting victims' rights at the top of the heap. We're saying that, look, we're not taking any rights away from defendants, because that, you know, and the opposition will say, oh, we're tramping on defendants' rights. No, what we're saying is, if a defendant has the Fourth Amendment right against search and seizure, Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination, Sixth Amendment right to counsel, and right to confront and cross-examine witnesses, those are fundamental rights. We're not trying to usurp those at all. But what we're saying is crime victims also deserve rights. For example, why should a crime victim whose family member is the victim, why should they be purposefully excluded from the trial during the trial? This happens all the time where crime victims, the defense will put them on the witness list when they're really not a witness at all to the crime. But they don't want them in the they don't want them in the courtroom. They don't want them shedding a tear. They don't want them hearing the evidence. They don't want them, quote unquote, influencing the jury. But the defendant gets to be there as a matter of constitutional right, and the defendant's family gets to be there as a matter of right, and yet the victim doesn't get to be there. So these are the kinds of basic fundamental rights that we believe victims should have in California, and we don't want them taken away except by a vote of the people. We don't want the legislature to tinker with it, and we want to elevate it to the highest status, which is in the California Constitution.
Assemblyman Todd Spitzer is Assemblyman from Orange County, statewide chair of the Yes on Proposition 9 campaign, and Chikata Amani here in studio with us is executive director of the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights and treasurer of both the No on 6 and 9 campaigns. From your perspective and those opposed to this, Mr. Amani, you feel that this would actually kind of turn the district attorney's office into a place that individual victims would have sway over or simply too much power over?
Well, Michael, I am deeply sympathetic to the urge to ease the suffering of victims. You know, I've witnessed firsthand the callousness of the system in dealing with victims. I have two brothers that have been shot. One of them still has a bullet in his head. Sadly, Prop 9 misses the mark, however. And what it does is our criminal justice system, the district attorney represents the state and the people of the state of California, not individuals. And one of the sad things in this initiative is that you can create an uneven justice system in that if two people commit the same offense and one family is vehement and just, you know, passionate and committed to making sure this person pays, you could see a situation where somebody serves 20, 30, 40, 50 years and another family has decided to find it in their heart to forgive this person, to understand, and to come to some resolution and move on, and that person serves way less time. The idea is that the district attorneys, who are professionals, know how to handle this, and they should be allowed to handle it. But, you know,
are you saying they come under, in some ways, the necessary suasion of the victims or the?
It says that they, you know, it's the Prop 9 says that victims get to get to say up, thumbs up or down, plea bargains, thumbs up or down, sentencing recommendations, thumbs up and down, charging recommendations. So.
That's really, unfortunate characterization.
It's not a characterization. It's actually in it. Other people have read it.
But let me
finish, Assemblyman. I'm sorry.
Assemblyman, hold on. Let him finish his screed here for a moment, if you would.
So, you said things I didn't agree with, but sadly, this is mostly about political grandstanding. A lot of these things could be handled. A lot of the victims' rights could be handled through a simple initiative to get some into the Constitution. But this really, the heart of this thing is this parole reform. This measure makes huge changes that will leave us holding the bag. We already have a prison overcrowding situation. 20 counties have jail population overcrowding situations. Prop 9 says that the state and local counties have to build their way out of this mess. Low-level drug users, you can't let them go to deal with overcrowding. Prop 9 says you have to build and you have to provide sufficient funds. So that means every county that's under a cap has to build before releasing low-level offenders.
And you see this link to 6. Why?
Because, again, this is the same old thing that got us into this problem is, you know, going to the ballot box with these overbroad initiatives that are poorly drafted that result in more harm than solutions. And this one is under the guise of victims, which is a noble cause. But the L.A. Times, the Orange County Register, San Diego Union Tribune, Riverside Press Enterprise all say this is going to result in continued serious prison overcrowding. California has 33 prisons. It holds 170,000 inmates. And that's nearly twice the capacity. We spend $1 million a year on sick inmates, on this guy who's basically a vegetable, because legislators are scared to let them go.
All right, we're going to actually give Assemblyman an opportunity to respond. But before we do that, I want to open the phone lines because I know there are many of you who want to weigh in on this or have a question or comment. Again, it's Proposition 9 we're looking at in this half hour, which will be on California's November ballot, which you'll have an opportunity to vote yay or nay on. And now you have an opportunity to join the program. It's live, it's interactive, and your calls are welcome. And you can call us toll-free at 866-733-6786. Again, we would like you to be involved, and if you have something to say or ask, by all means, do become involved. It's toll-free, 866-733-6786, or simply send an email to forum@kqed.org. Assemblyman Todd Spitzer.
You know, Michael, thank you for the opportunity to respond. You know, I heard Mr. Monty testify in Sacramento, and he's a very articulate, very well-educated person. I appreciate his passion. I appreciate his commitment to turning people's lives around so that, you know, they don't end up incarcerated. And if they do, they can reform and they can have a better life. I'm 1,000% behind that. But I've also been a prosecutor and plan to be a prosecutor again when I'm done in the legislature in December. And I can tell you this. We don't do a good job as prosecutors. Remember in the movement for doctors with implied consent and educating patients' Bill of Rights? And doctors said, oh, my God, the sky's going to fall. We can't let uneducated patients have any control or say about the particular medical practice or the medical plan we have for them. And guess what? When I go get my prescription filled, I'm given all the disclosures. When I go see a doctor, the doctor has to tell me what, if anything, he or she is considering doing to me instead of just writing a script and saying, thank you very much, get out of my office. Prosecutors need to do the same thing. We're talking about people whose loved ones have been gunned down in the street because of excessive gang violence in our inner city cores like Orange County, Los Angeles, and Oakland and San Francisco. We're talking about people who live in neighborhoods through no fault of their own other than they're poor and have no way to get out, who can't even walk the streets at night because gang members are coming looking for retaliation. So when it comes to the prosecutor, when a person comes into court who may not have a high school education or may not be college educated like we are or may not have advanced degrees like I do, that doesn't mean I have a right to think that I don't have an obligation to explain to them what their rights are. And as a prosecutor, I want prosecutors to reach out to victims. Now, the argument was victims can give a thumbs up or thumbs down on a plea. Not true. I can't do that as a prosecutor. The only person that sentences somebody to prison or county jail or no time or GPS monitoring is a judge. Juries don't do it. They only find fact. It's judges. And I will give judges discretion and continue to give judges discretion to pronounce sentences. So should I allow a victim to get up in front of – I mean, wouldn't you, Michael, if something happened to you – I remember one time when you were driving across the bridge and you fell asleep. You were taking some kind of medication, and I think you had a collision. I think if I recall, you didn't hit anybody, but you could have. And when that happens in our courts, when people kill people, shouldn't the victims have a right to be heard before the judge pronounces a sentence? Wouldn't you like to know if your daughter was killed that the defendant had been let out on bail before you saw him in the grocery store in your neighborhood? That's what we're talking about with Prop 9.
You're talking about prosecutors. I wanted to raise the anecdote you just told about me. It wasn't exactly a collision. I mentioned on the air that I had fallen asleep, and I was quite rueful about it because I was obviously sleep deprived, and I want to be honest with my audience about that. But nobody was hurt, including me. But I want to ask you about defense attorneys, because there's a provision in this that would limit access to state-provided attorneys for parole violators, and that seems to be in violation of recent federal court ruling, doesn't it?
Well, unfortunately, Governor Schwarzenegger, in his first day in office, signed a consent decree that submitted that situation. For years, individuals never had attorneys at parole hearings, and it was challenged. It doesn't happen in other states. Some states do, some states don't. But it's not required under the Constitution. And what we're saying is, look, if you have a especially complex case or you're indigent, we'll pay for your lawyer. But we're not going to pay $100 million a year for us to create more of an attorney system than is required under the Constitution. So Is it required in the Constitution? No. Can the defendant represent himself in front of his parole board? Absolutely. Can he talk about how he's remorseful, how he's found the Lord, how he's got a job when he gets out? Absolutely. Does he need a lawyer for that? No. And it's not required by the Constitution. So we're not depriving anybody of anything, except, unfortunately, Schwarzenegger, on the day one, the day he reversed the car tax, submitted on this case. And it was an unfortunate decision on his part and something that's costing taxpayers millions of dollars.
I do want to get a response from Mr. Romani, and I want to get our callers and emailers involved, but I need to ask you, because Mr. Romani brought it up, about prison overcrowding that would result because of this measure.
Today, you know, I one of my other duties in the legislature, I'm the chairman of the committee that oversees all operations of prisons. And we absolutely have a severe overcrowding problem. But the legislature has never allowed for early release of prisoners. And does the legislature need to build more prisons? Yes. We don't have enough prisons based upon our population. But at the same time, do we do enough today at Folsom Prison in the Bay Area for rehabilitation? They make mattresses there. They make furniture there. They make eyeglasses at San Quentin. But do we do enough? Absolutely not. And so I agree that building our way out of our overcrowding is not the solution to the future of California. But do some people have to be locked up? Absolutely. And are our prisons overcrowded? Yes. And guess what? If we don't build, we'll have no place to do the rehabilitation programs that are so desperately needed. We don't want to build more prisons to house more inmates. We want to build more prisons to create space so we can get programs back in prisons so these men mostly, and women as well, but it's really a problem with the men, can get educated and get reform skills.
All right, we are going to get to your calls and emails, but first I want to go back to Jakarta Amani to have him respond to what the Assemblyman has put forward here.
I'm stupefied. So first, the Assemblyman says that we're not taking anything away from, we're not taking any rights away, but he's taking away the rights to have attorneys appear with people at parole hearings. We heard from Senator Runner in the last half an hour about the highest population going into California's prisons are people on parole. So we clearly have a revolving door problem. And what Assemblyman Spitzer says is he wants to expedite that parole problem. He wants to make it faster. He wants to put some grease on that revolving door. The other thing that's sort of striking to me is district attorneys, and every single one I've ever met, are the most fierce victim advocates walking the planet. There's not anything they wouldn't do to help make victims whole again. And so for him to say that we have to go to the ballot box to get district attorneys to do their jobs, every district attorney I know would be offended. So, and if again, if this was all that was we want DAs to tell people what their rights are, I wouldn't be here opposing this thing. That's not all it does. This is going to bring so many legal challenges. This thing overturns or tries to undo three or four different consent decrees that local counties are going through and that the state are going through right now. You know, Californians have to reject this sort of piecemeal attack on the Constitution. We're adding little bits and pieces here, and not in a broad sweeping approach. I just so many things he said don't even go together.
Well, let's bring our callers in and find out what they have to say. And Steve, you're first up. Good morning. Welcome to Forum.
Hi there. It seems like every objection to building prisons or to a tough law enforcement approach is just that it costs too much money to put people in prison. But as I understand it from the studies, it's cheaper to put them in prison than it is to let them free and commit crime. And in particular, Stephen Levitt, who wrote Freakonomics, said that the cost of releasing prisoners was twice as much as keeping them in prison. So if we're looking at it from an economic approach, don't we also have to take into account the cost of crime?
And Jakarta Amani, you would say?
Well, you know, Texas, which is not a bastion of progressivism, has decided that it's going to forefront treatment and rehabilitation over incarceration. So, and that actually pays dividends. Every dollar you spend on treatment and rehabilitation, you get four. Every dollar you spend on incarceration, it costs you two.
Let me thank Steve for the call. I want to go right to another caller. That's you, Fernand. Good morning.
Yeah, hi. I'm a physician who works out of state prison, and I see 70% of the parole violators come in for very trivial things that actually have no victim. And I'm wondering how these propositions are going to interact with the Nonviolent Offender Rehabilitation Act, which is also on the ballot as Proposition 5 this year. And I'm wondering if, you know, what will happen if they all pass or...
Yeah, how would that occur, or could you predict to some extent, Assemblyman?
Well, the rule of law is that whatever initiative gets the most votes, if there's a conflicting provision, the one with the most votes prevails. So I've read Prop 5, and I don't think there's any contradictions with Prop 9.
You don't see it as being mutually exclusive to your
proposition?
No, they're
not. And that's, I'm glad the doctor called, because, and Mr. Amani mentioned this too, our recidivism rate, almost, you know, up to 70%, is horrendous, and it's totally inexcusable. And one of the things we don't have, but we are just now adopting, it's late, but at least we're doing it, is a risk assessment model so we can determine who really should go back to prison on a parole violation and who should not. You know, in other words, I totally agree. Don't waste that bed. If we can keep somebody in the community and give them intensive services at a county level so that they can change the behavior that resulted in the parole violation. So they're not contradictory, and Prop 9 does not limit any way whatsoever the particular options that Corrections is looking at today.
Let me thank Fernand, and we'll go to another caller. Nick, good morning.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi.
Hey, I'm just wondering, I work in the legal system. I'm an independent contractor. I work sometimes for the county for indigent defendants. And I see a lot of waste in the prosecutor's office, things like that. But I'm wondering what could possibly be the justification to say we're going to build more so we can do rehabilitation and this is going to help victims. And, I mean, isn't this really just a push by the prison systems? I mean, 15 years between parole hearings, doesn't that seem at least a little ridiculous? I'm just trying to figure out what's the actual, I mean, what's the meat here?
Todd Spitzer.
Well, I appreciate Nick's point. I mean, the 15-year, I'll just reemphasize it, it gives the Board of Prison Hearings the option to extend a hearing in the situation where somebody's never going to get out and they know it, Charles Manson and the like. And so we waste so much money on those parole hearings. In fact, the Legislative Analyst Office shows we'll save tens of millions of dollars by extending it out, and it's only where it's appropriate. And secondly, let's talk about prison space. When you go over to San Quentin, if you ever have a chance to check that place out from the inside, not as an inmate, but just as a visitor, you'll see that it's very, very crowded. It's unacceptably overcrowded. And it's also the reception center for the Bay Area. So while we're trying to figure out where an inmate should be placed and what needs and services he should get, we're not giving inmates who have a 5-year sentence, a 7-year sentence, the kinds of we don't have classroom space. Our gymnasiums, the place where we used to have recreation and classes, is now taken up by cells and not cells, but by bunk beds in a group living scenario. That's you can't educate inmates. You can't let them get their GEDs. You can't have them getting their college educations or learning to read when you don't have the space to do instruction. That's why we need more space.
Jakarta Mani, let me go back to you on this because the caller raises the whole question about just what kind of correlation we're going to see with rehabilitation here. How do you see it?
Well, I mean, one of the problems is, you know, Assemblyman talks a lot about murders, and those are some of the people who get life sentences. Some of the other people who get life sentences have never committed a murder. And they get sentences that are like 7 years to life, 15 to life. And when somebody has 7 years to life, that means if they're up for parole after 5 years and then their parole is extended until 15 more years, they've done more than twice what their original sentence was. And so it just doesn't go together. You can't actually toughen parole and have more people going in for minor infractions and then think you're going to have less people in prison and then mandate prison building first as the solution.
There's a listener named Danny who writes, to what do victims have a right? To be made whole through vengeance? Doesn't that notion belong in a different century? We have a punitive system today. It's not working. We need a big change. This brings up rehabilitation versus incarceration for punitive reasons or punishing through incarceration. And Todd Spitzer, as I understand it, the genesis of this has a lot to do with a 1983 UC Santa Barbara second-degree murder case. At least that's what I'm reading it.
Well, obviously you mentioned Dr. Henry Nicholas. He put $1 million into Prop 6. Back on Prop 66, in, you know, a decade ago, which would have weakened three strikes, He put in $4 million. So he's not a Johnny-come-lately to any of these issues. And, yes, he is facing his own legal difficulties today, no doubt about it. He was the one that funded the ability to get this on the ballot. It's named Marcy's Law after his sister. I mean, his sister was murdered when she was a UC Santa Barbara senior by an estranged ex-boyfriend who blew off her head with a shotgun. So, you know, for years, Dr. Nicholas, his mom, his father, they've gone to parole hearings. They've been used by the system. They've been abused, just like thousands of other crime victims. So while, you know, the opposition will argue, oh, you know, this is being bought and paid for by a billionaire, and, you know, he just has an agenda. First of all, his sister's murderer died last December in prison. He gets no benefit at all from this initiative. So, yes, I mean, there's some baggage that clearly the opposition is trying to exploit.
Well, they're calling it a vendetta, a revenge, in fact, initiative on his part.
Well, I haven't said anything about our campaign hasn't said anything about Mr. Nicholas.
Okay. No. And I appreciate that because you recognize.
I didn't mean to impugn your campaign. I meant some in opposition have said it's a vendetta.
No. I've seen the we're not uneducated and we're not naive. We understand how campaigns are run. But when Mr. Amani makes the allegation that somebody who gets a 7-year to life suddenly does double his sentence, he's missing the point. It's 7 to life. Life is the top part of the term. When the defendant was sentenced, he knew he was eligible for consideration at 7 years, but he could spend the rest of his life in prison. So to say somebody spent twice as much as they would have, that's just fallacious.
All right, we've got less than a minute left. I want to give Mr.
intellectually honest, Michael.
Let Mr. Monty have the final word here in terms of why people should oppose Prop 9.
People should approach Prop 9 because this thing is just poorly drafted. It's going to have broad unintended consequences, and we really need to protect our state budget during this time of economic instability. Your listeners have to ask themselves, what is impacting me right now? When I go to the gas pump, when I go to my bank, when I look at my job, what am I worried about? Where do I want the state to really be investing heavily? And it's not building more prisons. We spend $10 billion on dollars a year on that, and vote no, prop6.org, vote no, prop9.org.
That'll wrap it up. Jakhat Amani, thank you for being with us, Executive Director of the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights and Treasurer of both the No on 6 and 9 campaigns. We also thank Assemblyman Todd Spitzer, statewide chair of the Yes on Prop 9 campaign, and thank you, our listeners and our callers. It's up to you now to decide when you go out and vote in November. Senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our producers are Judy Campbell and Kevin Guillory. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.